Luke sprang toward Lomi Plo, at the same time grabbing her in the force and pulling her toward him. She launched herself into a backflip, trying to wrench free, but Luke had her too tightly. It was all she could do to bring herself back around before he was on her, igniting his blade and thrusting at her abdomen. She brought her purple blade down and blocked. Then Luke glimpsed a white flash sweeping toward his helmet and had to throw himself sideways. Her second lightsaber swept past his shoulder, barely missing. Luke used the force to accelerate his spin, whipping his feet up over his head. He landed a force-enhanced kick to her faceplate, the tip of his blade tracing a smoky curve up the side of her carapace. Lomi Plo whipped both lightsabers around in a counterstrike, the short purple one driving for Luke's abdomen, the long white one sweeping toward his knees. He switched to a one-handed grip, meeting the white blade with his own and blocking the other attack by spinning inside and striking across her elbow, forcing her to lock her arms with both blades extended. She countered by bringing her knee up into his helmet, sending him flipping away, and then they fell into a vicious contest of strike and counterstrike, neither one probing for weaknesses or trying to set up a fatal trick later. Both of them fighting just to survive two more seconds. All their attention focused on blocking the next blow, pouring all their strength and speed and skill into landing their next attack just a little quicker, hitting their foes' blocks just a little harder. Then Mara set off the first daser. A shrill whine filled the comm channels, and the battle zone shimmered with a rainbow iridescence. The air inside Luke's helmet suddenly smelled like fresh-cut pallies, a side effect, he knew, of the aura-deadening pulse Silgal had developed to disrupt the collective mind of the Kylix. Deprived of the thoughts and feelings of their nest fellows, the Gorog warriors froze or launched suicidal attacks or simply collapsed in trembling heaps. And Lomi Plo hesitated, her white lightsaber hanging above her shoulders for a heartbeat too long. Her lower blade caught out of position, defending a flank attack that wasn't coming. Luke launched a furious assault, slipping under her upper lightsaber and catching her lower guard on the backswing, then driving forward and slashing at her midsection. She pivoted, dropping one side back, and Luke switched to a lunge, driving the tip of his blade deep in the belly of her carapace. For a breath, the Queen didn't seem to realize she'd been hit. Seeing Luke stretched forward and off balance, she snapped her mandibles into light and brought her short blade around to attack his arm while her long blade descended on him from above. Luke thumbed off his lightsaber and rolled away sideways, watching in alarm as her long blade slashed past his head just a centimeter from his visor. He rolled once more and saw vapor billowing from the abdomen of Lomi Plo's pressure carapace, then brought his feet up over his head and found himself hanging upside down, caught in a net of golden force energy. Luke knew what was coming next. The Murker strike team had described how Lomi Plo had used a similar net to dice a Yuuzhan Vong captor into bits. A black, tarry substance began to boil from the puncture in Lomi Plo's pressure carapace, and the vapor plume disappeared. The Queen had plugged the hole. She turned and started to float toward Luke. The mandibles on the other side of her faceplate spread so wide, he could see the smiling row of human teeth they concealed. There was no question of reaching out to Mara or Jason for help. They were busy fending off Gorog warriors, somersaulting and spinning and force-deflecting shattergun pellets. Instead, Luke risked a split in his concentration and used the force to send a Wookiee-sized lump of spitcrete hurling toward Lomi Plo's head. The attack never reached her, of course. She sensed it coming and raised her hand, deflecting it straight into Mara. The impact sent Mara spinning, and a Gorog shattergun pellet slammed into the small of her back. A puff of vapor shot from the hole, then quickly vanished as the vac suit sealed itself. Luke still felt Mara's jolt of surprise, and to some extent, even the numb, deep ache of the wound itself. A fierce rage boiled up inside him, and perhaps that was what gave him the strength to break Lomi Plo's force net. Or perhaps she had just been distracted by the boulder Luke had hurled at her. It didn't matter. Luke pushed and the net dissolved. He flew at Lomi Plo, determined to finish this now, but terrified that he wouldn't be fast enough, that he wasn't good enough to kill the unseen queen in time to save Mara. Lomi Plo turned to meet him, and suddenly she seemed the size of a rancor, with bristling bug arms 3 meters long and reflexes so quick that her whirling lightsabers were nothing but a blur. Luke drew up short, trying to shake his head clear, trying to calm himself so he could determine the truth of what he was seeing. But it was no use. Luke was too frightened for Mara. He could feel her starting to slip, feel her fighting to control the pain, and the Gorog were still attacking. Luke hurled himself at Lomi Plo again. It didn't matter that he would never get past her guard, or that he didn't understand what he was seeing. He just had to kill her. But Lomi Plo had grown weary of fighting Luke. She spun away, her long upper arms lashing out toward Mara. Luke locked his blade on and drew his hand back to throw, then found that his arm wouldn't come forward. Nothing would move at all. His mouth wouldn't even open to voice the scream that rose inside him as Lomi Plo's white lightsaber came arcing down toward the crown of Mara's helmet. Then Jason was there, slipping in front of Mara, his lightsaber flashing up to block. He caught the blow above his head and whipped his blade over Lomi Plo's and sent her white lightsaber spinning away into the rubble. But Lomi Plo had two lightsabers, and she brought the second one up under Jason's guard, pushing it into the abdomen of his back suit. The purple tip came out through his back, and still Luke couldn't move. If anything, he was more paralyzed than ever. He couldn't breathe, he couldn't blink. It seemed to him that even his heart had stopped beating. The tip of Mara's power blaster appeared under Jason's upraised arm, and Luke could feel the anger that was driving Mara, the rage at what had happened to their nephew. A blinding bolt flashed from the barrel, taking Lomi Plo full in the chest and sending her tumbling head over heels, leaving her purple lightsaber hanging in Jason's body. And suddenly, Luke could move again. He used the Force to pull himself over to Jason and Mara, then deactivated Lomi Plo's lightsaber and tossed the handle aside. By the time he'd finished, Mara was already placing a patch over the holes in Jason's vac suit. Luke could sense that Mara was in pain but still strong, and she remained lucid enough to have applied a pair of emergency patches to Jason's vac suit. But Jason's presence had grown as elusive as when he'd been knocked unconscious, and the pattern of dark spray around the suit patches suggested that he'd lost a lot of blood.
Jason! Don't worry about me.
Jason's voice was anguished but calm, and his words carried the sharp edge of command.
You're showing Lomi your weakness. It's okay.
Luke peered over his shoulder, but saw no sign of Lomi Plo or her Gorog anywhere.
Mara drove her off. I did?
Mara asked. Obviously, she hadn't been able to see Lomi Plo either.
You're sure?
Jason shook his head.
We don't know.
He grabbed Luke's sleeve and pulled him closer.
You showed her your fear, and she used it against you.
Mara caught Luke's eye, then nodded past his shoulder.
I'll take care of Jason, she said. You take care of Lomi Plo.
Luke took Jason's power blaster and slowly turned around, quieting his own thoughts and emotions, surrendering himself to the Force so that he could feel its currents and search for the cold stillness that would be Lomi Plo. He felt nothing, not even the telltale ripples of her Gorog warriors.
I think she's gone,
Luke said.
I can't see her anymore.
Interrogation cells were the same the galaxy over. Dark, cramped, and stark. Usually too hot or too cold. The interrogator usually had a breathing problem. Some wheeze or rasp, or even an artificial respirator that suggested he'd been cuffed to a chair a time or two himself. This interrogator, a blue-skinned chiss in the black uniform of a defense fleet commander, spoke with a wet snort. It was probably caused by the old wound above his black eye patch, a thumb-sized dent, deep enough to have collapsed his sinus cavities. As the officer approached, Leia's nostrils filled with the harsh stench of Kerak fumes, probably what passed for deodorant aboard a Chiss Star Destroyer.
You're awake. Good.
I'm glad one of us thinks that's good, Leia said. Frankly, I would have preferred to sleep until my head stops hurting.
Yes, the knockout cast.
After the trouble we had taking Jedi Lobaka into custody, we felt it necessary to be prudent with you and Master Sabatine. He stepped back and gestured toward a sizable display screen hanging in the corner. On cue, an image appeared, showing Han cuffed into a chair similar to Leia's. Another Chiss officer, younger than the one in Leia's cell but with a harder blue face, stood next to Han. On a nearby table lay an array of nerve probes, laser scalpels, and electrical clips. A virtual smorgasbord of torture. Leia gasped, her heart suddenly hammering hard.
Captain Fell promised there would be no torture.
If you surrendered. Instead, you continued your attempts to escape until he trapped you against the shattered moon.
A Chiss is going to hide behind the technicality? On screen, the young officer picked up a laser scalpel and activated the blade. Han responded with a sneer, but Leia could see the fear beneath his show of disdain. The officer brought the blade close to Han's eye, then made a very precise serpentine cut down Han's cheek, just proving that there were no rules for this interrogation. The letter S appeared in faint crimson, and blood began to dribble down Han's face. Han held his sneer, not even flinching.
I can only get prettier.
Please, Han, don't provoke him, Leia urged silently.
It's just a scratch, the interrogator said. As long as you cooperate, it's the worst your husband will suffer. But if you refuse, my protege will be required to demonstrate his skills.
A surge of hatred rose inside Leia, and she had the sudden urge to show this little man who was really in control here, to reach out with the Force and squeeze his throat shut. Instead, she swallowed her anger and settled for narrowing her eyes.
This may surprise you, but I'm willing to tell you whatever you wish to know.
She turned toward the hidden vidcam she sensed to one side of the display screen. You're already aware of the Falcon's mission, and the Jedi have nothing else to hide. The interrogator followed her gaze and smiled.
Impressive. Others might guess that a cam exists, but not its precise position. I'm sure you have many such talents, Jedi Solo.
His smile faded abruptly, and he leaned in close, breathing fetid air in her face.
But I must warn you against using those talents to escape. Regardless of whether you succeeded, your husband will be in no condition to join you.
He glanced at the display screen again. When Leia looked, the cam panned back. Behind Han stood two Chiss guards, their Kerak pistols pointed at his head. Leia took this in, her hatred of the interrogator now growing to include his superiors and all the others whom she knew were watching, and she expanded her Force awareness around her. As expected, she felt two Chiss guards standing behind her as well. But she also felt a more familiar pair of presences lurking above and behind the guards, approximately where a ventilation duct might be. Cock, Maim, and Meewal had escaped custody, or, more likely, they had never been captured in the first place. Leia turned her attention back to the interrogator.
I don't appreciate your threats, she said.
It was a code phrase that would alert the Nogri to the fact that she was about to give an order. But threats are sometimes effective.
While Master Sebatine and I can take care of ourselves, I would be very unhappy if any harm were to come to Han or the other members of our crew." The interrogator frowned, confused by what seemed only an indirect response to his warning.
"If you are asking for a guarantee of their safety..."
"I'm not asking anything, Commander." Leia paused, waiting for the interrogator's name to rise higher in his thoughts.
"Baltkey,
I'm telling you that whatever happens to Han and the others, I'm going to do the same to you." She turned to the hidden vidcam.
"And to you."
The tightening of Baltkey's lips were barely perceptible. He spent a moment trying to stare Leia down, snorting softly with each breath, and she felt the Nogri withdrawing to carry out her instructions. Finally, Baltkey stepped to Leia's side and extended a hand toward one of the guards behind her. The hand returned, holding a hypo-injector.
"Don't be afraid, princess."
Baltkey pulled up the sleeve of her robe and reached down to press the hypo to her forearm.
"This is only something to help you relax and assure that the answers we receive from you are true."
"Oh, I'm not afraid, Commander." Leia created a loud force thunk in the corner behind her, then used the force to redirect the hypo into Baltkey's thigh and depress the injector. He gave a startled cry and pulled the hypo away so quickly that even Leia barely saw what had happened. Given that the vidcam's view had been partially obscured by the commander's back, she hoped the monitors in the control room had not seen it at all.
"Commander," asked one of the guards behind her, "is something wrong?"
"Nothing's wrong," Leia said reassuringly. "I flinched. And Commander Baltkey nearly injected himself instead of me."
Baltkey frowned and looked at the hypo in his hand.
"Commander?"
the second guard asked.
"She flinched."
He passed the hypo back to the guard.
"I nearly injected myself."
Leia let out a long breath.
"The drug must be working, Commander. I'm feeling more relaxed already."
"Good. Slow am I."
Baltkey's slur was barely perceptible, but it was there. He stepped back in front of Leia, wobbling slightly.
"I think we're ready to begin."
"There's no need to stand, Commander," Leia suggested.
"Sit down and make yourself comfortable. You're going to find me very cooperative."
"She's going to cooperate."
Baltkey looked to one of the guards.
"Bring me a chair."
The door whirred open, and a moment later, a black uniformed guard placed a chair behind Baltkey.
"Thank you."
Baltkey sat down and studied Leia, snorting softly, his brow furrowed, as though he was having trouble remembering what he wanted to ask her. She was going to have to work fast. "I imagine you want to know what the Jedi plans are," Leia prompted. Baltkey shook his head.
"Already know him."
Leia frowned. "You do?"
Affirmative.
He nodded for emphasis.
"We want to know why."
"Why what?"
"Why the Jedi are forcing the Galactic Alliance to side with the colony against us."
"We're not," Leia said. Baltkey clicked the comm unit on his lapel.
"She's lying. Cut something off this time."
The officer in the vid image smiled. Then he activated his laser scalpel and pressed the tip to the base of Han's ear.
"I'm not lying."
Leia put the force behind her words.
"It's the truth."
"The truth?"
Baltkey seemed confused, and Leia realized that the belief she was fighting was deeply ingrained.
"But the Kylix ambushed us with a brand new Alliance destroyer at Sneevu."
"Yes, I know," Leia said. "It was the Admiral Akbar. The Kylix captured her in the Murgo choke. That was shortly before Admiral Buatu prevented the colony's battle fleet from leaving the Urugetu Nebula."
"The Kylix? Capturing an Alliance Star Destroyer? That doesn't seem very likely, Princess."
The officer in the display began to cut into the skin around Han's ear, prompting Han to clench his teeth and tense against his restraints.
His head wisely remained still.
"You stupid rotter!" Leia yelled. "I saw it with my own eyes! I was there!"
"You were there?" Baltke continued to watch the display screen, his face blank and disinterested. "I'm sure that's why the capture looks so convincing in the news holo footage."
Leia groaned. "Look, I'm never going to convince you that it wasn't staged. So why don't you stop cutting and ask your source?"
"Our source?"
"The person who told you about the Falcon's mission," Leia said. "You clearly have good reason to trust your source."
"An excellent suggestion," Baalke nodded, a little too enthusiastically. "I'll pass it along to Commander Fell.
Maybe you should stop torturing Han until you can confirm my answer."
Leia used the Force again, trying to make Baalke think that was a good idea.
"I am telling the truth."
Baalke stood and pressed his comlink.
"Wait."
Han's torturer glanced over his shoulder, then stopped, the laser scalpel still held to Han's ear. Leia exhaled in relief.
"Thank you. By the time you get a message to Coruscant, there wouldn't have been enough left of him to..."
"Coruscant?"
Baalke asked, looking confused. "That is where your source is, isn't it?" Leia focused all her attention on Baalke, alert to any hint of deception, in his face or in the Force. "Or is he with the fleet?"
"You'd have to ask Captain Fell." Balki's tone was helpful, as though he really believed Jagged might tell them.
"He's the only one who knows who the source is."
Baalke cocked his head and frowned, no doubt listening to instructions over a hidden earpiece, and Leia tried not to choke on the growing lump of disappointment in her throat. Baalke's face turned a lighter shade of blue.
"You're very clever, Princess, but cleverness carries a price."
He depressed his comlink again.
"Finish it."
The officer resumed cutting, removing Han's ear, then stepped back with the appendage pinched between his thumb and forefinger. Han's mouth opened in a roar, and he shook his head, spraying a line of blood across the man's blue face. Leia grew so angry and sick inside that she had to fight to keep from retching.
"I hope you remember my warning, Commander," Leia snarled, "because I certainly do."
"Of course,"
Baalke replied pleasantly.
"And I hope you remember what will happen if you attempt anything so foolish."
Again, the display screen showed the two guards pointing their Carrick pistols at the back of Han's head.
"Now, perhaps we should discuss your daughter's activities."
"There's no point. You know more than I do," Leia said. She was still in shock from what she'd just seen. "But I'm sure you won't believe that either."
Baalke looked confused.
"I want to believe you, Princess. Just tell us why she's leading the Killick ground swarm."
"How do I know?" Leia snapped.
"Because she's a joiner."
Baalke snorted loudly and cocked his head, and Leia began to regain control of herself, to realize that she wasn't going to help Han or the Jedi by allowing her fear and frustration to control her. She turned toward the hidden vidcam.
"And even if Jaina wasn't a joiner," Leia said slowly,
"the Jedi don't condone speciesside. We're all opposed to what you're doing here. Any help we're giving to the Killicks, that's the reason."
She glanced toward the display, and when the officer remained standing next to Han's bleeding figure, she added,
"All the Jedi are trying to do is end the war."
"By defeating us,"
Baalke retorted. Leia shook her head.
"No! By destroying the colony and restoring the Killicks to their prior state of disorganized nests."
Baalke scoffed.
"Perhaps you and Captain Solo aren't getting along these days."
He glanced toward Han's bleeding image.
"Perhaps that is why you keep lying."
Leia used the Force again.
I am not lying.
You aren't lying?
Even under the power of a mind influence, Balki sounded unconvinced.
Then the Jedi are fools. What you suggest can't be done.
We think it can. Leia turned to the vidcam again. You asked why the Jedi are opposing you. Let me explain. The floor and interrogation chair began to shudder with a sudden acceleration tremor. Balki furrowed his dented brow and remained silent for a moment, listening to his earpiece and snorting softly every time he inhaled. The Force became charged with anticipation and with a strange, stoic fatalism. Leia waited until Baltke's attention returned, then asked, "Something wrong?"
"Not at all," he said smugly. "Everything is going quite well, as a matter of fact."
He returned to his seat and gestured for her to continue.
"But please don't waste our time with more lies. Our session will soon be cut short."
"Very well," Leia said. The vessel continued to tremble, suggesting that they were accelerating into battle. "You already know what the Falcon's mission was."
"Yes. Your assignment was to rendezvous with your daughter and her mind mate."
Balki was speaking a bit rapidly now, the truth drug and the excitement of the coming battle serving to agitate him.
"Then you were to enter Chiss space and attempt to infiltrate our command and control centers with teams of Killik commandos."
"Not quite," Leia said. "Actually, the plan was to attack only one center, using a variation on the same tactic the Killiks used to capture the Admiral Akbar."
Balki arched the brow above his red eye, then asked in an interested voice, "How did you expect capturing one of our command and control centers to destroy the colony?"
"We didn't," Leia said. "That was just to get your attention. Luke is destroying the colony himself."
"Now I know you're a fool. How could one Jedi do that?"
"By destroying the Dark Nest and its unseen queen," Leia said. "That should be completed by now."
"You tried that at Korribu," Balki pointed out. "You failed miserably."
"This time, we're better prepared," Leia said. "Our scientists had developed a few weapons to disrupt the Killik's collective mind. And we have an Alliance attack fleet to support us."
Balki's voice grew derisive. "And once the Dark Nest is gone, you think the Killiks will become good bugs again?"
"Not at all," Leia said. "That's only the first part of Luke's plan. He should be arriving here very soon to complete the second."
"Which is?"
"Destroying Unu and removing Raynar Thule from his role as the colony's leader," Leia said. "It may take a little time, but our scientists are certain that once Raynar is no longer able to control the nests by exerting his will through the Force, the colony will grow disorganized and enter a self-regulating cycle again. Then, it won't be a threat to anyone."
"An interesting theory," Balki said. "What exactly do you mean when you say, remove Raynar Thule?"
"Whatever it takes," Leia said.
"So you're going to assassinate him?" Balki asked.
"That's one possibility, but I don't know what Luke has decided," Leia said. "I can promise you this, though. Raynar Thule is a Jedi problem, and we'll do whatever it takes to fix it." Balki considered all this for a moment, then said,
"It does sound plausible."
He stood, shaking his head and turning to the display screen.
"But I can see we're going to have to cut something else off your husband." "What?"
The display screen showed a Chiss medic bandaging Han's ear, and by the looks of it, enduring the cussing out of his life.
"Your story doesn't hold together,"
Balki told Leia. "Attacking one of our command centers contributes nothing to this plan."
"That's because the Jedi don't see the Chiss as an enemy," Leia said.
Luke never wanted to cause the Ascendancy harm, only to make a point.
Is that so?
Baalke asked. I'm afraid we failed to see it. The point was to show that the Killix are capable of infiltrating even your most secure facilities. Killix can sneak into any place. They're insects. All they have to do is lay eggs in a few wounded soldiers and let you take them home aboard a medical frigate, and a whole base will be infiltrated. Or they could stow away in a returning supply freighter and then infest an entire planet. Before you know it, your whole society will be swarming with Killix. And I don't have to tell you what that means. You'll become an empire of joiners.
And the Jedi think we would be better off letting the colony mass nests on our border until they are ready to attack?
We think the Chiss would be better off ending the war our way, Leia said.
You'll never win the war your way. It's not possible to wipe out the Killix. They were building nest cities on Alderaan 20,000 years before the Chiss Empire was born, and they'll be building nest cities on your frontier 20,000 centuries after it's gone.
A confident smirk flashed across Baalke's face. He cocked his head again and briefly turned toward the hidden vidcam, then faced Leia.
I'll pass your warning on to my superiors.
He started toward the door.
Wait,
Leia commanded. Baalke stopped, clearly in spite of himself. He glared at her angrily.
When I told you the Killix would outlast the Ascendancy, you smirked, Leia said. Tell me why.
What are you doing?
Using a Jedi mind trick?
Baalke demanded.
It will be your fault if I have to hurt Captain Solo again.
The remaining guard started to step forward behind Leia. She grabbed him in the Force, then hurled him into the corner with the vidcam. He hit headfirst with a loud thunk, then dropped to the floor and did not move. Leia looked back to Baalke and put the power of the Force into her voice.
Why do you think the Killix can't win?
Baalke's face twisted into a mask of resistance, but the truth drug made it impossible for him to lie.
Because we have developed our own solution to the Killix problem, and our plan will work.
He tried to go to the door again, but Leia force-shoved him up against the wall.
What kind of solution?
A permanent one.
Baalke cast a longing look toward the display screen, then said,
It's not too late to save your husband. Just release me.
Han's going to be just fine. Leia used a force to begin working the locks of the cuffs holding her in the chair.
You, on the other hand, are in trouble.
Or have you forgotten what I said about anything that happened to Han?
I remember.
Good. The first cuff came loose.
You might want to be a little more informative about this permanent solution.
Baalke shook his head, but he could not resist the power of his own drug.
Parasites!
Parasites?
Leia asked. The second cuff came undone.
You're going to infect them with parasites?
Baalke nodded.
Any minute now, he said. After the Killix spring their trap.
Trap?
You know. Isn't that why you turned back from the shattered moon?
Leia's jaw fell.
You know about the Killix hiding there.
We suspected.
Baalke seemed almost proud.
We're counting on them to ambush us.
I don't understand.
Leia stretched her hand toward the unconscious guard and summoned his Carrick pistol to hand.
Counting on their ambush for what?
To deliver a resounding defeat to us,
Baalke said. Leia understood the rest of the Chiss plan. And tomorrow, all of the nests will have a huge victory dance.
That's right, Baalke said.
The Killix aren't the only ones who can play the infestation game.
How long? Leia asked.
We'll have to keep fighting for a while, Baltke answered. The parasite won't be fatal for a year.
And by then, it will have spread throughout the whole colony. Baltke smiled.
You see, we can win the war our way.
Are you mad? Leia cried. That speciesite! She used the Force to open her ankle restraints, then heard the cell door whirring open behind her. Thinking the other guard had returned with the vocoder Baltke had requested, or the officers watching from the control room had sent reinforcements, she threw herself out of the chair and rolled across the floor, then spun around, brought her captured Carrick pistol around, and found herself pointing it at the handsome face of her favorite scoundrel.
Han?
Whoa, take it easy, princess.
Han raised his hands.
I know I'm late. We had to take care of the control room first.
I don't care, Leia cried, recovering from her shock. She threw herself into Han's arms, barely noticing as Cock, Maim, and Meewal slipped past to take control of Baltke and the unconscious guard. Then she reached up and touched his ears.
They're both there!
Honey, are you okay?
Han moved her back from him and studied her with a concerned look, until he noticed the display screen in the corner, which continued to show the medic and the torturer standing beside Han's bloody head.
Hey, that poor Rudder looks like me!
Mara opened her eyes and found herself staring up at a blinding white blur. Everything smelled of Stericlene, and there were machines hissing and whirring all around. She tried to sit up and found herself held tight by a strap across her chest. The brightness overhead came into focus, and Mara recognized it as the softly lit whiteness of an infirmary ship ceiling. It took her a moment to understand why she was here. Then she turned her head and saw the tangle of IV lines hooked into her arm, and she remembered. The shatter gun pellet that ripped through her vac suit and abdomen. It had destroyed one of her kidneys, and no healing trance could repair that. The huge head of her Bith physician, Ogubuugi, appeared above her.
Good. You're awake. How are you feeling?
How you think I'm feeling?
Mara croaked. It was supposed to have been, how do you think I'm feeling? But her throat was as dry as a Tatooine swamp, and her tongue was too heavy to lift.
Ogaf.
Baugi nodded approvingly.
Good. That's what I was hoping. The operation went very well. No complications at all. We already have a new kidney growing in the cloning tank. We'll insert it in a couple of weeks, and in a month, you'll be ready to start your rehabilitation.
A month?
Mara cried.
Are you a doctor or a...
Better let me take over, Dr. Baugi. Jason appeared at Mara's bedside, seated in a hover chair with a drainage bag hanging from his side. Aunt Mara can be a little testy right after she wakes up. Baugi smiled more noticeably and nodded.
So I see.
He placed a delicate long-fingered hand on Mara's forearm, then said,
You need to be patient with this. Even a Jedi can't grow a new kidney overnight.
Mara waited for Baugi to leave, then turned to Jason.
Shouldn't you be in a Bacta tank?
With the Killix still holding Thyfera, the fleet is running short on Bacta, Jason explained, moving his chair closer to her bedside.
I'm out of action for a couple of weeks anyway, so I thought I'd save it for someone who doesn't have a healing trance.
Mara nodded her approval. Good idea. Very thoughtful. She pointed at the drainage bag hanging from his side.
How is it?
Inconvenient, Jason said. I've got holes in three different organs, and I can't move well enough to fight until I fix them.
I know the feeling, Mara said.
She reached for his arm and winced at the dull ache that the effort sent shooting through her lower back.
Thanks, Jason.
she would have gotten me.
She nearly did, Jason said. If you hadn't been so fast with that blaster, neither one of us would be here.
All the same, Mara squeezed his arm, then asked, "Do we know what happened to her?"
Jason's expression turned sober. Pelion's intelligence staff has been reviewing the battle vids. A skiff left Gorog just before we blew it. Nobody challenged it. Nobody even seemed to see it, including the combat controllers.
Mara had a sinking feeling. Lomi Plo.
That's what Uncle Luke thinks.
Mara used the Force to operate the bed controls and raise her upper body. The shift of position sent another dull ache through her lower back, but she pushed the pain aside and looked out the door into the infirmary lobby, where Luke was meeting with Silgal and the other masters.
And he's sticking to his plan? Jason nodded.
Who's taking our places?
No one, Jason said, a slight frown betraying his disapproval. Silgal offered to lead a team herself so that Master Durin could back Luke up, but Uncle Luke wouldn't hear of it. According to the intelligence maps that June and Tarfang left, the collection teams only need to harvest nanotech from 15 different environments inside the nebula. But they're going to have to seed more than 1,000 worlds in the colony. Trissina Lobby is out of action with some crash burns, and Uncle Luke didn't want to take another master off the dispersal teams. He thinks it's the nanotech environmental systems that will keep the Kilix in check. In the long run, anyway.
Mara's heart sank. So he's going after Raynar alone?
Admiral Pelion is taking the fleet to Tanupe, Jason said. Wraith and Rogue squadrons will be assigned specifically to support him, and he'll have a company of Lando's Bug Cruncher droids. But we both know they won't be able to do much once the Force duel starts.
And Lomi Plo isn't going to give up either, Mara said.
Not likely, Jason said. Unless that blaster shot you got off kills her first.
Mara gave him a sour look. What do you think the chance of that is?
About the same as you do, Jason confessed. He'll have to take both of them out. Lomi Plo and Raynar.
Mara's stomach began to ache with fear. Jason, we can't let him do that alone.
I don't think we have a choice in the matter, Jason said. Have you tried to stand up yet?
Out in the lobby, Luke dismissed the masters and turned to enter Mara's room, the faithful R2-D2 trailing close behind. They'd barely crossed the threshold before Mara demanded, "Are you crazy?" Luke stopped and cast a sheepish look back toward the departing masters before he returned her gaze.
"You heard. You'd better not have been thinking you'd keep that from me, farm boy."
"Of course not." Luke came to her bedside and took her hand, then gave Jason a stern look.
"But I had hoped to tell you myself."
"Luke, the colony isn't going to win this war overnight," Mara said. "Wait until Jason and I can back you up. Raynar is inexperienced, but he's powerful."
Jason nodded his agreement. "And Lomi Plo will be..."
"I can't," Luke said, cutting them off. He clasped a hand on Jason's shoulder. "I've been feeling something urgent from Leia. This war is coming to a head now."
"Do you know how?" Jason asked.
Luke shook his head. "All I can tell is that things didn't go well at Tanupe. The Falcon never connected with Jaina. I think maybe the Chiss were already there attacking."
Mara's heart skipped a beat, but the corners of Jason's mouth rose in a near smile. "Then we shouldn't interfere," Jason said. "If Mom and Dad can recover Jaina and Zek, staying out of the Chiss's way might be the best thing for the galaxy."
Luke frowned.
"Jason, you're as bad as your father," he said.
"You think the answer to every insect problem is to start stomping."
"Not every insect problem," Jason said. "Just this one."
"I thought I'd made that clear."
"You have," Luke said. "You also made it clear that you'd follow the Order's leadership in this matter."
"It was only a suggestion," Jason retorted. "Can't the Jedi Knight express himself around here anymore?"
Luke's expression softened.
"Of course," he said. "But half a dozen times should be sufficient.
I'm very aware of your opinion about the Killix, and believe it or not, I have given it consideration.
Okay, sorry to bring it up again.
Jason looked more disappointed than apologetic, which suggested to Mara that he was sincere about following the Order's leadership, even if he disagreed with it. But I still think you should wait until Aunt Mara and I can back you up. You won't solve anything if Raynar kills you.
Or if Lomi Plo does, Mara added.
She'd been growing more impressed with Jason every day since Luke took sole leadership of the Order, and she was beginning to wonder if he might make a suitable second-in-command someday soon. I don't think you can take them both, Luke.
Then I'll have to take them one at a time, Luke said, because if I wait for you two to recover, Lomi Plo will have time to recover too, and so will Gorog.
Lomi is never going to be weaker than she is right now.
Luke's tone was as firm as Mara had ever heard it, and she could feel through their force bond that he wouldn't be moved from his plan. But Jason, bless him, was determined to try.
And you're still not ready to face her.
Luke's eyes flashed with resentment, or it might have been self-doubt.
I will be the judge of that, Jason.
Of course.
Jason spread his hands in a gesture of surrender.
You are the Grand Master.
Thank you, Jason, Luke said. He turned to Mara, and she felt the faintest tingle of force energy washing over her body.
And now, if you'll excuse me, I'd like a...
Mara?
Now Luke's voice was frightened.
What's wrong?
Good question, Mara said. She turned to Jason, but he only held a finger to his lips and moved his hover chair closer to Luke.
R2-D2 emitted a confused whistle and raised a hydraulic extension with a medical sensor at the end.
Mara!
Luke turned and hit the emergency summons button next to Mara's bed. But Jason made a motion with his hands, and the button didn't depress.
Luke didn't seem to realize this.
He turned back to Mara and placed his fingers to her throat, checking her pulse.
I can't feel a pulse! R2, call an MD droid! Tell her to hurry!
R2-D2 spun toward the data jack to obey, but Jason used the force to disable the power to the droid's treads.
Mara caught Jason's gaze.
All right, Jason, this has gone far enough.
Not yet.
The message reverberated without words inside Mara's head.
He must learn.
Mara felt another wave of force energy pass over her, and Luke cried out in horror and looked toward R2-D2.
R2, what's taking you so long?
R2-D2 issued a frustrated whistle and spun an accusing photoreceptor toward Jason.
Luke could take it no longer.
He raised a hand and began to fill it with life-giving force energy.
Jason, we can't wait. We have to revive her ourselves.
He pointed at the emergency respirator hanging on the wall.
Get the respirator.
Luke leaned over Mara and started to place his hand on her chest, until Jason raised an arm and pushed him away.
Jason!
Luke screamed.
What's wrong with you?
Nothing, Jason said calmly. And there's nothing wrong with Aunt Mara.
Luke's gaze swung back to Mara, and she couldn't decide whether he looked more stunned or relieved.
You're alive again.
I was never dead, Mara said.
I think Jason is trying to make a point.
Luke turned back to Jason, still too confused to be angry.
I don't understand, Jason. What's she?
You're not ready to face Lomi Plo again, Jason interrupted, and you just proved it.
Luke's confusion started to fade, and his anger quickly began to build.
You did that to me?
Jason shook his head. You did it to yourself, he said. Your fear betrays you. All I did was bring your fear to the surface. You created the illusion yourself.
Remember what happened in the Nest ship? Mara asked. After I got hit, you couldn't move.
Luke, you froze.
And then I couldn't see Lomi Plo anymore, Luke said, growing calmer.
He turned to Jason.
You did the same thing to me.
I doubt it,
Jason grew uncomfortable and his gaze slid away.
That was just a mirror illusion I learned from the Falanasi.
But it does prove you're still vulnerable to Lomi Plo, Mara said.
You don't fear for yourself, Jason said. You fear for others. And now Lomi Plo knows that. She'll use it against you.
Luke nodded, and a glimmer of recognition came to his eyes.
Fears aren't so different from doubts. I have to face mine.
No, Jason said. You have to eliminate them.
Eliminate them? Mara asked.
That's a lot to ask, especially before we reach Tanupe.
But I can do it, Luke said. I have to.
It had grown clear that, for once, Han and Leia Solo would not arrive at the crucial moment. The crucial moment was past. Maybe Jaina had misinterpreted the situation when she reached out to her mother in the Force. Or maybe something had delayed the Falcon. It hardly mattered. The battle could no longer be stopped. Zek was descending out of the jungle's defoliated canopy, with her Stealth X slaved to his. And all that remained now was to spring Unu Thule's trap and watch the Chiss die. As the Stealth X's drew near, Jaina and Zek's mind link was restored. The struts had barely touched the jungle floor before Jaina's astromech was opening the canopy and tweedling a welcome.
Nice to see you too, Sneaky, Jaina said. All systems go?
The droid gave an affirmative whistle, and Jaina felt a wave of concern from Zek. She looked battered and exhausted and bloody. Maybe she wasn't ready to start flying missions.
You think the Chiss will wait while we take a nap? Jaina retorted. Without waiting for a reply, she turned to her Walu communications assistant and reached down to rub a forearm along an antenna.
Sorry for getting you killed so many times, Walu.
You be careful too, Jaina said. Someday, the song will have a verse about your bravery at the Battle of Tanupe.
She was just climbing into the pilot's seat when her mother suddenly touched her through the Force. Leia seemed terribly alarmed and was clearly trying to warn Jaina and Zek about something, but the feeling was too vague to tell more. Then Jaina and Zek felt Saba reaching out to them as well, opening herself to a battle meld. They did the same, and the situation immediately grew clearer. Saba and Leia were here, somewhere near Tanupe, and they needed Jaina and Zek in the air. Something terrible was coming. Something that had to be stopped. Jaina hastily buckled her crash webbing, then glanced out at Walu, and she and Zek wondered if this was something they should warn the Killix about.
You need to warn the swarm, Jaina said. Something bad is coming.
We're getting a strong feeling from the Force. Warn the swarm and alert Unu Thule. Jaina lowered the Stealth X canopy and energized the repulsor drives, then followed Zek up into the top of the jungle, where the defoliated Mogos were now shattered and burning as well. The two Jedi ascended toward the cloud ceiling, half blinded by alternating instants of crimson brilliance and stormy dimness, trusting their stick hands to the Force, weaving and rolling their way through a forest of crackling energy. As they broke out of the clouds into the emerald vastness of Tanupe's upper atmosphere, both exhaled in relief. A blinding torrent of energy was still crackling down around them, but now that they were above the rain and the clouds, the situation looked a little more like the battles they had grown accustomed to in space, with an emphasis on little. The Mega Maser beams were fanning down from about 50 points overhead. The vessels that fired them were still so distant that they were barely flecks against the sky. But they were descending fast, following each other down in a large open spiral and trailing long plumes of gray entry smoke that gave away their positions. Jaina wrinkled her brow. A military fleet dropping out of orbit with batteries blazing might be terrible, but it was hardly something that Leia and Saba would expect Jaina and Zek to stop with a pair of Stealth X's. The warning had to point to something else. Something the two Jedi Knights had not yet seen.
Sneaky, Give me a full tack on that fleet, Jaina ordered. I'm looking for something that doesn't fit the attack profile. The fleet deployment appeared on Jaina's tactical display. The enemy's ground support task force consisted of 30 Star Destroyers and their escorts, a truly awesome flotilla, capable of incinerating the jungle from canopy to roots for kilometers around. But the Chiss were being oddly careless, leaving only a handful of Star Destroyers and their escorts in orbit to provide top cover. When Unuthul arrived with the Moon Swarm, he was going to do more than bloody the enemy fleet and drive it off. He was going to smash it against Tanupe.
The Chiss have made their last mistake, Zek said through their mind link. After Unuthul destroys their fleet, they will not be able to press the war. Then Jaina sensed something else from Zek. A sudden surge of alarm, and they quickly dropped back into the clouds, where they would be difficult to see. Four squadrons of Clawcraft had started to descend ahead of the main task force, escorting a pair of Chiss defoliators and swinging wide to avoid the Mega Mazer barrage. Jaina and Zek reached out to the defoliators in the force and suddenly felt sick and cold. Those ships were what Leia and Saba had wanted them to intercept. There was something terrible aboard those two defoliators. Something so sinister and deadly that it had overwhelmed their danger sense from nearly 100 kilometers away. Navigating by instruments, they swung onto an interception vector, and shortly afterward, they escaped the barrage area. Unuthul soon felt the threat too. A dark pressure arose inside their chest, pushing them after the two defoliators, compelling them to attack now. Finally, when the two defoliators had moved so close that the main fleet would not risk firing into the fight, Jaina and Zek raced forward. They remained in the clouds until they were directly beneath their targets, then pulled back their sticks and climbed straight up. Jaina armed a pair of proton torpedoes. The colony could no longer acquire the beradium needed to make shadow bombs, then designated the defoliator on the right. We'll take that one, Sneaky. Let me know when we have a target lock. The droid chirped an acknowledgement, and for a moment, it looked like their stealth X's might reach attack range unseen. Then Clawcraft from the two trailing squadrons began to drop down to meet them. They seemed to be moving in slow motion, since the atmosphere even this high was thick enough to slow down a starfighter and tear it apart if it maneuvered too sharply. But the distances were also smaller, dozens of kilometers instead of hundreds. And within a few heartbeats, the dark specks of the first Chiss fighters came into view and began to rain cannon bolts down on the stealth X's. Sneaky reported that they had a target lock. Jaina confirmed that it was the correct vessel, then sensed Zek doing the same. They launched their torpedoes together and watched the white dots of the propulsion tails vanish into the green sky. A second later, the first laser bolt slammed into Jaina's forward shields, spilling orange flame in front of her canopy and reverberating inside the cockpit as shield hits never did in space. Zek slipped in close and slightly ahead of her, buying time for her shields to recover by placing himself between her and their attackers. They continued to climb like that, barely 5 meters apart, juking and jinking as one, pouring fire back up at the Clawcraft. Then Sneaky chirped in surprise, and Jaina checked her tactical display to find both sets of proton torpedoes detonating 20 kilometers from the defoliators, well short of where any countermeasures should have taken effect. What the hut happened? The tactical display replayed the last several seconds, and Jaina saw four Clawcraft come streaking in to intercept the proton torpedoes head-on. One of the pilots was lucky enough to blast his target out of the air with cannon fire, but the other three missed and stopped the torpedoes by crashing into them.
That's spaced, even for Chiss, Zek said through their shared mind.
Zek took a hit in his shields. Then Jaina slipped into the forward position. The enemy squadrons were coming head on, a mad tactic, as dangerous for them as it was for their targets. They were coming in waves of four, the leaders already so close that they were the size of fists. Jaina and Zek picked the second one from the left and fired together,
pounding through its shields by landing 5 cannon strikes simultaneously. Before the fireball died away, Jaina and Zek switched targets. The Jedi fired again, aiming where the Force told them the craft was going, rather than where it was. The pilot accommodated them by jinking into their line of fire, and the starfighter vanished in a flash of yellow flame. Jaina and Zek were just turning their attention to their next victim when the crash of a triple cannon strike shook Jaina's cockpit. Her instrument panel lit up with depletion lights and damage warnings, but she couldn't hear the alarms or Sneaky's tweedling over the roar of the explosion. Zek slipped into the lead position, and they began to pour cannon bolts at the next claw craft. Sneaky scrolled a message across Jaina's display. "It is imperative that we turn back immediately. We have lost our forward shield capacitor." "So?" Jaina asked. "We still have shields for now, right?" "Until we suffer the next hit," Sneaky replied. The Chiss finally rolled the wrong way. A trio of hits punched through his shields and took off an attack claw, sending him into an uncontrolled spin. He vanished into the roiling gray-green clouds below. And then the last claw craft was on them, not evading, just coming straight at the stealth X's with all 4 cannons blazing. Zek's shields overloaded and flashed out in a second. Before Jaina could move into lead position, his stealth X took a hit in the nose and another in an upper wing, and still the claw craft kept coming. Then Jaina realized the pilot had no intention of veering away. With her and Zek flying in overlap formation, the explosion from a mid-air collision would be enough to take them both out. The thought had barely entered Jaina's mind before Zek was breaking left. Jaina broke in the opposite direction, trying to force a hesitation by making the enemy choose between targets. The Chiss was too good to hesitate. He smoothly switched targets and took aim at the side of Jaina's Stealth X, pounding through her shields and blowing head-sized holes into her fuselage. Unable to shoot back, she used the Force to tip his claw craft downward, redirecting his fire and forcing him into a dive that carried him beneath her starfighter instead of crashing into it. As the starfighter streaked past, the Force fairly crackled with the pilot's frustration. With his very human-feeling frustration. Jaina reached out to him and felt an all-too-familiar presence. "Blast," she muttered. Jagged fell. "Sneaky, open a hailing channel to our target." The channel was open by the time she fell in behind the claw craft. "Jag, what are you doing here?" she demanded.
"Trying to shoot you down. But I forget, that's supposed to be a military secret. Now I guess I have to kill you."
"Jag, you shouldn't take this so personally," Jaina said. She noticed that he was gradually turning, trying to draw them away from the defoliators. "You and I were over a long time before Zek and I met Tat."
"You think I care whose antennae you rub? You betrayed your honor."
"Our honor?" Jaina was confused. "We haven't made you any..."
"I guaranteed Lobaka's parole at Korribu, and you returned my courtesy with betrayal at Supply Depot Thrago and the Battle of Sneevu. My family's reputation has suffered."
"Jag, I'm sorry," Jaina said. "In the urgency of the situation, the parole just didn't occur to us."
"Don't apologize. The fault is all mine."
Jag had continued his turn and started to climb.
"I should never have made the mistake of thinking Jedi had honor."
"Jagged, I want you to know that I still love you, and I always will." Jaina activated her attack sensors and locked Jagged's claw craft as the primary target. "But if you can eject, you should do it now." Jaina and Zek opened fire. But Jagged had already gone into the claw craft spin, whirling his starfighter around its ball-shaped cockpit and spraying laser bolts in every direction as he fell away in an erratic spiral impossible to target. It was a popular tactic in space combat.
But in an atmosphere, it was so dangerous and difficult that most pilots would have preferred to take their chances with no shields and one engine. Yet Jagged Fell somehow managed to keep the air resistance from tearing his craft apart. And by the time he vanished into the clouds, he was already emerging from the spin and starting to pull up. A cannon bolt flashed past Jaina's cockpit, so close that it raised a heat blister in the canopy, and she and Zek turned and dived. With their forward shields down, and the Chiss behaving more like Killick suicide flyers than Clawcraft pilots, their only chance of stopping the defoliators lay in catching the two vessels in the clouds, where their stealth X's could remain hidden until they attacked. The Clawcraft pursued, but both Jaina and Zek still had their rear shields and were able to endure the short pounding they received before reaching cover. They'd barely entered the clouds before the dark pressure began to build inside their chests again. Unu Thul did not want them to wait. He wanted them to attack now. Jaina and Zek reached out to him in the Force, trying to make him see that they couldn't possibly succeed, that their stealth X's were barely holding together, and their only hope of success lay in concealment. Unu Thul did not understand or care. The dark pressure grew unrelenting until they thought their hearts would collapse. And even as Jaina and Zek closed on their targets again, they sensed Leia and Saba struggling with their own troubles far above. A shock wave of astonishment rolled through the battle meld, and suddenly, Leia and Saba seemed confused, hopeful, and terrified all at once. The dark pressure inside Jaina and Zek grew more powerful than ever, and they found themselves poking their canopies out of the clouds in spite of themselves. The defoliators were only a few kilometers above, so close now that Jaina and Zek could clearly see their hawkish silhouettes and the drop-shaped outlines of two enormous bombs hanging beneath each wing. Each of the vessels were tightly ringed by a defensive cordon of clawcraft, with another six starfighters arrayed farther out in intercept position. There would be another dozen Chiss ambushers even farther out, circling low over the clouds, ready to pounce the instant the stealth X's showed themselves. A new presence joined the meld. The dark, oddly familiar presence of a Twi'lek joiner, a Lima Rar. A wave of revulsion rose inside Jaina and Zek, and inside Leia and Saba as well. Jaina and Zek pushed their throttles forward, then pulled their sticks back and began to climb in a wild corkscrew that made their astromechs shriek structure stress warnings. With no forward shields left to share, it made no sense to fly in close formation. Instead, they climbed in parallel spirals, angling across the bows of the defoliators to cut off their descent. The Chiss moved quickly to stop them, the defensive rings shifting to remain between the two stealth X's and their targets, the interceptors diving to confront them with laser cannons flashing. Jaina and Zek returned fire effectively, but without enthusiasm, destroying a clawcraft apiece and knowing that those pilots were being sacrificed to a diversion, just as they were themselves.
Sneaky, can you get a torpedo lock on either of the defoliators? The droid replied with an affirmative tweet, but added a long descending whistle that suggested he questioned the wisdom of this attack.
Don't argue!
Jaina armed all of her proton torpedoes and sensed Zek doing the same.
Just let me know when you're ready.
The droid emitted a brief whistle. Jaina fired her next two proton torpedoes and watched in horrified fascination as a pair of clawcraft dropped down in front of the shrinking efflux dots. A moment later, she was momentarily blinded when a pair of dazzling flashes lit the sky between her and the defoliators. Guessing that she must be in range by now, Jaina began to pour laser cannon fire into the defoliator Sneaky had targeted. Two proton torpedoes streaked from Zek's Stealth X toward the second defoliator. A Chiss clawcraft dropped down and obliterated the first torpedo with a volley of cannon bolts. The pilots trying to intercept the second torpedo were blinded by the explosion, and it slipped past the defensive screen to detonate against the defoliator's belly shields. Almost immediately, Jagged Fell and a dozen other ambushers emerge from the clouds to begin hammering Jaina and Zek's rear shields. Trapped in a devastating crossfire and badly outnumbered, the only sensible thing for Jaina and Zek to do was to roll out. Jaina launched her last set of proton torpedoes and accelerated toward her target, pouring a constant stream of cannon bolts ahead of her and doing her best to make it appear that she intended to ram the defoliator. Zek mirrored her every move, heading toward the second defoliator. Four Clawcraft defenders quickly moved to block their torpedoes. The interceptors raced forward on a collision course with Jaina and Zek, while Jag and his ambushers poured fire into the stealth X-tails with no concern for hitting their own starfighters. Then Jaina and Zek sensed a Lima streaking up out of the clouds, coming up behind the defoliators, where there were no longer any Clawcraft to challenge her. Jaina's rear shields went down, then one of her fusial engines flamed out, and Sneaky began to trill warnings that she couldn't understand. One of Zek's wings came off. His Stealth X entered a spin and tried to nose over into a dive, but Jaina felt him using the force to pull it back into a climb. He continued toward his target, his spiral more erratic than ever, and firing with only two laser cannons, but holding the Chiss wrapped. Alima finally launched her first set of proton torpedoes, targeting the nearest defoliator. She was so close that the vessel had no chance to deploy countermeasures. The first torpedo overloaded the vessel's shields and blasted its tail into shards. The second vaporized the entire ship, bombs included, leaving nothing behind but a white flash. The force roiled with shock and confusion, but the Chiss reacted with remarkable swiftness, instantly abandoning Jaina's Stealth X to rush back toward Alima. They were too late. Alima had already sent another set of torpedoes toward the remaining defoliator. One exploded just as the defensive ring arrived at the vessel's stern, and Jaina and Zek felt a dozen lives wink out in an instant. The other torpedo smashed into a sacrificial Clawcraft, but it was so close to the defoliator that both vessels took the hit. The defoliator's fuselage and one wing vanished in another white flash. But one of the wings survived. It went fluttering planetward, its silver skin flashing brightly in the blue sun, the two bombs still intact, and the clouds below coming up fast.